this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey, it's Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 371. I'm Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker, surprisingly not demoted from hosting duties.
Dad's here, hide the weed.
And glad you're back, Steve. We missed you. We really missed you.
It's a comforting voice that everyone was looking for to so they could come back.
This is the Halloween episode, right? No?
No.
Speaking of though, we are sponsored by nobody. But we are still indebted to the Deliberate Noise Network of podcasts, which we are a part of. And that is also the home to our sister show, Marvel Noise, which hasn't missed a beat. Although I have been off to parts on assignment between my vacations and my conventions, keeping me away from hanging out and cursing with you guys.
AKA Secret Wars.
I'm really behind. Well, except for the main title, I'm way behind on all those too. I haven't been reading much of anything except for what I've reported on over on Marvel Noise. Just been so distracted.
Well, you needed to read those 36 issues of Silver Sable, Steve. So
it was like a bear on my back, dude, for so long.
But just remember, it's the indie companies that need the word out.
That's right. And we are Indie Comic Book Noise. We've got a Facebook page. We've got a Twitter, Indie Comic Book N, and at Steve Raker, and at WWX Kev, and at LA underscore Rabbit 1, and at me and my sloth.
For Phil. We didn't do any of that stuff while you were gone.
In case you didn't figure it out by process of elimination. That's Phil. Hey, can I just say, though, that the Boston Comic Con was, like, totally awesome. Or Boston. Do I keep doing that, dude? It just rolls off my tongue. It's ridiculous. I was at the Baltimore Comic Con at the end of September. And then the very next weekend, we had one of those small little Albany comic book shows. So I just had a lot of fun preparing for and enjoying the experience of and then, you know, handling and going over my goodies from both shows. Just a really good time. And getting to be with the No Apologies guys and the DC Noise guys. And it was like a podcasting convention within the comic book convention, which is what conventions should be, right? We convened.
Yeah, it's all about visiting. I was super jealous hearing you getting a long road trip with one Mr. Alan New Mutant.
Yeah, oh, that must have been good.
Yeah, although it was a little sad dropping him off. Like after we went into the Holland Tunnel and came out, and Alan's just like, "You could just drop me off anywhere." And it's Sunday night, and just dropped him off somewhere before driving Daryl home.
That's because he owns that whole town.
He does. So it's like
he's king of it all.
It's true. He probably walked on that.
I was going to say he sounds like a serial killer.
He knows which side of the street to walk on to stay in the sun.
Well, I didn't have the grand Baltimore experience, but we did have our largest Long Beach Comic Con yet that I attended, flying the Indie Comic Book N flag. On their second year, I jumped in and bought the lifetime passes to the show.
Right.
So I'm all in the gravy now. It's all...
Sure.
They've paid for themselves, and we're freeing up. It's a two-day show. We only went the Saturday for a variety of reasons, but first of all was their unfortunate timing. They put it on opening weekend for the NFL season.
Yeah.
That's a hard pill to swallow. Next year they're not doing that. And part of it is I purchase a expensive TV package to watch a lot of the games that cost more than my pass to the Long Beach show.
Well, that was our experience in Baltimore, too, because we're at the it's Sunday at the con, right? And there's a home game for the Ravens. And the Ravens complex is, you know, kitty-cornered, basically, to where the convention center is. And we're thinking the game's at 1 o'clock, so we're thinking it gets out at 4-ish. It's going to be a nightmare getting out of there. Creators are getting worried about it. Some skedaddled early and flew out of there or got their taxi out of there early. People were thinking of, you know, how they were going to handle things. The problem was the Ravens were down and getting killed. So, like, traffic started coming out early, and we were thinking, oh, well, it's too late anyway. We hung out until about 3:45, right, thinking we're going to race to the car and zip out because the car is really close to the convention center. It's really easy. But the Ravens had made a comeback, and don't you know, into overtime. We got right out of town and no traffic at all because everyone stayed in their seats once the Ravens made their comeback. So it had its blessing. But it's funny that you should mention the NFL connection because we definitely experienced it in Baltimore.
Yeah, it's real. Well, that was the other thing. Because there were a bunch of conventions going on, I think it might have been the weekend Lobster Fest, and also there was a religious gathering. Maybe Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witness, some one of them types. And so parking was a lot more scarce than it had been in the past, in addition to the expansion of the show. Because we had been going with the strategy of showing up maybe 10 or 15 minutes after open and kind of breezing in, because they're really good at Long Beach about getting people onto the floor. So you can either get there kind of early and try and rumble your way in, or... You know, I'd just assume wait till the doors open. There's nothing I need in that first 10 minutes or anything anyways. But because of all these parking situation and so many more people, it created a bit of a nightmare. And that's when I was like, yeah, I don't think we're coming back. And it wasn't difficult to convince my wife the same. We were a little bit lured. John Barrowman was coming on Sunday. And I'd always heard he's pretty funny. He does, when he does his talks, he's really
he's a riot. Remember when candid. He used to co-host that Attack of the Show at the end of its existence? Did you ever see that program, Attack of the Show, where they, like, it was like a nightly show on, back when, I forget what the network was called.
G4, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, they would have pretty girls on, and they would talk about tech stuff and do silly things. And towards the end of the show, the male host from years being on the show left. And it was just the two girls hosting it, which was just fine with me. But they would have certain guys come on every once in a while, and he was one of the ones who would come on. And he was hilarious with them, and he was totally goofy and silly and everything, and it was live, so they were, you know, he was very entertaining. I've actually only rarely seen him acting, and I'm so surprised. He's such a good actor because he was such a goofball who seemed like he was pepped up on goofballs. seen him live.
Yeah, all the people I know that have seen him talk have just said it's really fun. Maybe not appropriate for all ages, but it just one of those old-time entertainers. And that was in the back of my mind. But the other thing is, I love the Long Beach show, but 2 days is kind of a stretch unless you're going back to pick up some artwork or something like that. You can make it happen if there's a lot of programming. Like this year, they did something really interesting. They had a whole space track. So they had like NASA engineers and everything. And they were giving talks about the space program and people that worked on shuttle flights and things like that. And some of my friends went to that. I actually didn't go to any programming this year, what with getting late. And then my favorite part of the show that you talked about, Steve, visiting people. So, you know, you have lunch with one set of friends and then dinner with a different set and everything. And it's just really a fun way catching up with those people. And then also, obviously, I got to walk the Artist Alley. But I was very impressed. They kind of segregated the floor a lot smarter. The one thing I don't like is when they change the orientation, because the Artist Alley section was in the middle, but it was kind of the rows were a little bit slanted, which kind of made my touch of OCD angry. But they had a comedy section on the inside corner. And then what I really love was they put the cosplay corner in the back corner, which is awesome.
Yeah,
because I think cosplay is key. Like, there are a lot of people who are into it. I like seeing it. I'm glad it's there. But I thought it was smart to put it somewhere kind of away where the people that want to go see it, you go right to it.
Exactly. The smart cons have room on the periphery and in the back for the cosplayers to gather, and at least one aisle from near the beginning to the end that's like extra wide so that they can just make their way to that back zone and congregate there, and it works out great. That's what Baltimore does as well.
And I was super impressed. The one thing, in the past they'd done a bit more on the top, the show floor was the whole bottom part. Mm-hmm. And I like when they have a setup because it can get a little clogged there with people posing. I think some of those ones, maybe they don't always have badges or whatever. And they and plus, out in that front part, that's where they park all the vehicles, you know, like the turtle van and the Back to the Future car and all that jive that always gets. But it's fun. I mean, it's a fun atmospheric element to it, but there is traffic flow.
You don't want to go back to day two for that? Come on.
Well, it's a lot of. I had a really good time. I bought a ton of books. It was a nice mix of like old vendors that I'd seen before and some new people too. But I'll probably save some of the book discussion for when we start reviewing comics. But I was pretty if it hadn't been opening Sunday, I would have went. But with the parking and the opening Sunday, I was a little bit like, it's just not, I don't want to go through this again. And also Kamikaze is coming up, which is sort of a similar show, and it's geographically a bit closer because it's at the LA Convention Center. So it's kind of that one's a bit more pop culture-y, but their big star this year is going to be Grant Morrison. So that they usually have a few big comic book names there.
Yeah, but there's going to be a significant before you go.
Other stuff, yeah. Well, I mean, Bendis was supposed to be at last year's, but he didn't end up making it. So I'm not going to be holding out my breath to make sure. I want to make sure he shows up before he shows up. And they've had Todd McFarlane is there. He's a pretty good draw still. He's always fun. And obviously Liefeld, because he lives out here, he comes to those. And yeah, it should be a good show. But I'll talk more when we get to our thing. But it's bouncing around. We haven't heard from the Canadian couplet.
I don't know. Maybe they want to hear from you, Steve, since you haven't been on here for so long.
All right, let me give you a couple other guys that I encountered in Baltimore then. How about Tim Truman, who I love his writing the Conan stuff even more than when he was drawing it, and I always loved his old Grateful Dead comics and, all that Grim Jack, and he helped follow Mike Grell on Star Slayer. But he has a new King Conan comic that was just solicited for December. That's going to be a new limited series with that Tomas Giorello art. Oh, man, it's going to be outrageous. And then, speaking of Mike Grell, I bought a page. I finally got to meet Mike Grell, and I never pay a lot of money and buy a page, but I did. I bought a page from Grell from, it wasn't actually that much, but it was for me, relatively speaking. And it was from the Tarzan Dark Horse Presents Gods of Oprah stuff, so it was really, really nice. And got to talk to Ron Mars and got to hear about the demise of Witchblade right when he was setting up a concept that I talked about in a few episodes ago, or several, since it's been since like episode 366 that I was on last. But I was saying how Witchblade, Ron Mars came back on writing it, and he was setting up this whole new concept of her kind of working for this mysterious rich beneficiary who seemed like she was collecting mystical artifacts and trying to shut down like threats of untrained people getting their hands on mystical artifacts and popping up on the radar. But then there seemed to be some other agenda there that was secret, and she was learning that. And I'm like, man, this could, as an agent of this lady, this could go on for a while. But no, they're ending that whole series very abruptly, which is kind of a shame.
Yeah, flagship book.
Yeah, exactly, right? And Bernie Wrightson was the other one. I got to mention Bernie Wrightson. It was so awesome that he was there. He's obviously suffering, but at the same time had a smile. And while other people had their tip jars out and were charging for signatures for the Hero Initiative, Bernie was not wanting to handle any of that, he said, when they came up and offered him a jar. He was just doing his autographs and selling awesome prints. And I went in line each day of the 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Baltimore there, and each time bought a print or two from him and went back through his line just so I could thank him for being there and let him know how much it meant to me to be able to talk with him. And then I bought from Frank Frazetta's granddaughter, who handles selling the prints and stuff from the Frazetta family. They've got these awesome, malleable, soft iPhone covers, and I got one of the Death Dealer. It's so awesome, my new phone. And his granddaughter takes it, and she's like, and look, the back is like kind of tacky, and she holds her clipboard up, and she just sticks her phone to it, and it just sticks there. I'm like, what? Yeah,
ain't going to trust that anyway.
That's crazy. I did it on the side of Tom King's table, though, at the con in Baltimore, and it worked.
I saw the messages he was getting at his table.
We had a lot of fun, though. And at the Albany show, the Vicarious Visions guys were there because they're a local company that was contracted by whoever does the big Skylanders video game to make the Skylanders video game series that is very popular with kids. And they also make, and Ron Mars co-writes with David Rodriguez, the Skylanders comic books, which are really high quality. If you got kids or no kids who are into the game, they would really like the comic books. And it makes me think, just real quick while I'm mentioning kids comics, Dark Horse has a really good Plants vs. Zombies series of comics that are out now that Paul Tobin writes. And Boom, their Adventure
Boom
Time
is going
comics,
strong. Yeah, Adventure Time and
their regular show comics continue to be both really high quality month after month. Even
that
though,
Midas Gold one too.
And my kids are digging on the Clarence one, even though it was just a limited series. But they continue to put out good stuff of their Cartoon Network related.
Even though they lost the Disney stuff, they're going strong.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, now let's hear from North of the Border.
Well, over the past year or so, I've been trying a lot of those subscriptions. I don't know if you ever heard of something like Loot Crate.
There's a whole bunch of different ones.
Well, Loot Crate.
You know what the best crate is I've seen, though, is the Marvel one. That beats everyone I've seen.
Oh, you shut your mouth. It's bull crap. Loot Crate, though, is garbage because it's just like stickers and candies and stuff like that. I never tried the Marvel one. I didn't know they had one.
The collector core? That looks awesome.
But a lot of the ones I've tried have been a lot of junk. But I tried this new service called Nerd Block.
Yeah.
And you can get, like, specific things. So I get, like, the horror block, and it's $20 a month, and I always get a t-shirt, Blu-ray, like, all awesome stuff, Pinhead painting. Oh, cool. And I tried this new one for $14 called Comic Block. And so you get four comics and a t-shirt guaranteed. So in this first one, I thought I'd tell you what I got for $14. So the t-shirt alone makes it worth it. And I got a Sega t-shirt, or Saga, whatever it is. And which is pretty cool because it's one you can't get in stores. And then I got two, like a lot of the comics don't really matter for big collectors like us because we're going to have them or it's stuff we don't want. But I did get Danger Girl number one by DW. I've never read the Danger Girl stuff before, but this one was all right. It's just Tomb Raider, basically.
Yeah, they're entertaining.
For the most part. But one thing that was kind of interesting is it's just the blonde girl now, and they were kind of hinting, I guess, they had a falling out or something maybe at some point, the rest of the team.
I'm not sure if it's that or if it's a prequel or what it is. I was kind of waiting for it to wrap up before I read it.
This seems like it takes place after, when it happened before. And then I also got a Mad Max number one, Thanos versus Deadpool, and Mirror's Edge, which is crap. That video game one or whatever. But yeah, that's for $14. You can't go wrong just for the t-shirt alone. So I recommend that for comic fans.
Cool.
I guess I should have saved this for the Halloween episode.
I thought this was the Halloween. No, I'm just kidding.
That's the next one.
Yeah, I guess it'll be the next one. Yeah, that'll force everyone to come back for another episode before Halloween. Phil's thinking.
Bob Carr will be back, right? You guys, things are still good with him, right? Nothing happened while I was gone, did it?
We may have started a Twitter feud with those rascally rogues over at Earth 2.
Well, you know, I was supposed to read that Judge Dredd comic for this episode.
Earth 2?
And I read a few, I guess, what was it, chapters? Is that what they call them? Few progs. I don't know what the whatever the thing is, but I only got through like the beginning so far, and I was just imagining the
new Dredd?
The whole Judge Dredd guy being like, I don't know. It kind of reminded me of now that I've just watched Gotham, it kind of reminded me of one episode in particular. But the, you know, Judge Dredd, he's all, "I'm super serious. You're gonna do what I want. I'm very strict." Just imagine him having that crazy.
He lives in a persona. Tough world.
Yeah,
those have robots that cool. Do things. That's not too tough.
I just got this big hardcover of the Judge Death stuff from the, and it has the old Boland stuff and whatnot. And I pop it open, and it's color. It's like from the Eagle colorized versions from the 80s, and it looks fantastic because I'm so used to getting a nice hardcover of some of the old Judge Dredd stuff and popping it open, and it's like, oh yeah, it's in black and white because I'm so tainted from having that color stuff from the Eagle comics reprints from the early 80s, which is how I got to experience Judge Dredd.
I think I have some color stuff. Like, don't they do color stories?
Well, now they do, sure.
Yeah.
When it's like J. Michael Straczynski writing it and all that stuff. But I'm talking about the old stuff. The old...
Well, this was 90s stuff, I think, that I read that was color. So
90s? I'm talking about old stuff.
Oh, is like years old. This is like the guys that go into the comic shop and they go, "I got some old comics for you," because like the 1990s comics might be 25 years old. They don't realize that's, you know, when the bumps and the everything in the industry were.
All right, so.
But I got some serious old comics.
All right.
Like Golden Age comics I was reading.
Ooh.
From the Chilling Archives of Horror Comics. You know, the IDW, is this, yeah, this must be Yo Comics.
Yeah, Haunted Horror?
Yeah. But it's Frankenstein. You know, Dick Briefer's Frankenstein?
Cool.
And it has the hole you can put your fingers through the cover, because there's like holes in the cover.
Really?
It's kind of weird. Well, it kind of makes sense, though, because they have like three different eras in this hardcover. They have like the crazy killer Frankenstein, and then they have the comedy Frankenstein, and then the other one, like the last one, he's like sort of a killer again, but it's like more of an in between, like the other two. But yeah, they have the evil, ugly Frankenstein on the cover, and then you put your fingers through, and there's eyes looking through, and it's the comedic Frankenstein is like on the inside. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting, probably because of that whole evolution thing. Even though this is like random stories, like you can, because it goes from the 40s to the 50s, so you can see all the craziness in between.
Yo puts out such good collections, don't they? And like you said, they're wrapped up in such a nice package. It's usually some nice spot varnishing on the hardcover too.
And then they have all the some of the pencil sketches or all the background material and on the, I guess, the artist or writer or whoever they're spotlighting. So it's like, hey, he did this at this point for this reason and all that stuff. And they even have the blood splashes or splotches and everything on the where the page numbers are supposed to go. So I just thought that was hilarious. Because it was just like really nuts though at the beginning. Because they're like, oh, yeah, Frankenstein's murdering people. So it's like Dr. Frankenstein's all like, well, I'll just make another creature and sew a lizard man onto like a human body. And then they'll fight each other. And I was just like, what? It was very strange.
Those are the thoughts you're supposed to not listen to. The ones you're supposed to keep out.
But it's so weird because the art style changes too, as long, you know, with the tone. It's like, oh yeah, he's all killer and like he's ugly and it's like pretty detailed. And then you get to the comedy stuff and Frankenstein looks totally different. I think it was the early stuff and then the comedy stuff I enjoyed the most. Like the stuff in between, like at the end, it's just like, I'm like, yeah, that's all right. But I kind of got into the comedy stuff where, you know, Frankenstein's all like, oh yeah, you're a monster and you're going to go off and murder all these people. And instead he's not given, I guess, specific directions about what he's supposed to do. Like, you're going to find out what you're supposed to do once you leave the house. But what he finds out is like, oh, yeah, birds are pretty and, like, all this kind of crazy stuff that he's not supposed to do. And then, you know, he'll be dancing to music or goofing around with some kids or, I don't know, just weird stuff. And I wouldn't say it's, like, overwritten. Like, there's words, but it's not, like, a lot of words. Like, it's not, I don't think it's, like, typical Golden Age. Like, sometimes there's panels where it's not describing what is happening in the panel. And there's even one story in here where, like, Frankenstein's supposed to be like Superman, but he's Blooperman. Hmm. And it says it's by Siegel and Shoestring.
So he's Bizarro?
Oh. Instead of Siegel and Shuster, you know.
Shoestring.
Yes.
The Fifth Beatle.
I'm not familiar with those people.
But it's just funny, they go into a whole parody of that situation. It's like, yeah, if you didn't get it, they keep on adding more and more references to it, and it's like, yeah, it's pretty obvious what they're going with here. But I thought it was really cool. Like, I know there's other collections out there where I forget the company, but they put out like entire volumes of this stuff. And I would like to read more of this, especially the comedic stuff. Because Frankenstein, like, using an elephant and then running off to solve some crimes or whatever is hilarious.
That is pretty over the top. Have you ever read the Frankenstein stuff from House of Ideas in the Bronze Age?
Don't think so.
All right, that some of that stuff
it
wasn't meant to be, but looking back, ends up being pretty kooky, too.
I think I have the essential for that. But I think all that type of kind of stuff is crazy. Like the Godzilla stuff, I remember being...
Oh, that was great.
I was just like, this is incredible. I'm just like, how does this end up happening? Like, just so insane. I guess when you had nothing, though, to... Like, I guess you had comic strips and stuff like that to reference. But when comics are like first starting out, it's like, what are you going to do? I don't know. People just do anything. They don't really care. There's no rules.
It's like, wait, you mean Frankenstein isn't the name of the monster? How do we proceed with the Frankenstein comic book now?
Well, that's why it's so weird. Like, one of them, it seems to, like, make a point of that, and the other ones, like, they just don't care. They're just like, you know. You know the deal. But, like,
can't say Frankenstein without me bringing back up Bernie Wrightson, man. His Frankenstein plates just made me love that book and pore over that book and passages in that book. Just love his stuff. Andrew, what else did you find in L.A.?
Well, speaking of Long Beach, I have in my hands from IDW, Comic Book Apocalypse, The Graphic World of Jack Kirby, which was a package that went along with a art show of Kirby's original art that happened here in Northridge up at the college there. And you may have heard that by our now bitter rivals, Earth 2. But see, I got a copy of the book. So take that, Bob Gar. What they did was they opened the show, and then about halfway through, they had a panel where the curator and a few people came and gave a talk, so I wrangled a crew together to go up and listen to it and then see the exhibit afterwards. And it's pretty interesting to kind of think of looking at comic book pages as an art installation instead of looking at them as comic book pages. And they talked a little bit about that. That was one of the guys went on a whole speech about sort of, you know, production art and then art treating the piece of the production as art itself and having it displayed in a gallery versus looking at it, you know, in a portfolio or at your desk or whatever. Because they talked about how some of it isn't like they find themselves reading the comics sort of, but it was a lot trickier when it's in a gallery for some reason. The other thing I learned is Eric Larson has at least two complete issues of Kirby because he loaned them, an issue of Commandy and an issue of Thor.
Awesome.
And I'm like, oh my gosh.
He could smoke some of that stuff and still have a lot left over.
Can you, I mean, I'm sure he has a lot more, but just, oh yeah, I'll just loan you two complete issues. Why not? Knock yourself out, kids, you know, have a few. So among our local group, it spurred an interesting discussion of Royer versus Sinnott. But for some reason, no one picked up the Coletta banner to defend his work. But the other interesting thing was it really is focused on, you know, late period Marvel into the DC stuff. Sure. I mean, they had a few, like one Machine Man page, like a splash page, but it was kind of missing the romance stuff and some of the early Golden Age stuff. And I think they didn't really talk about it, but I think part of the reason is just the difficulty in securing some of that. I mean, if you're able to get two complete issues, why wouldn't you just do that and kind of build? I mean, that was maybe half the show, so they had a good amount of other pages too. But I was just super impressed to see two full issues and walk through it.
Yeah.
Incredible. The other thing that was interesting for me is something I didn't really like in the old days, but when you see them in person, it's a bit easier to get the full impact of, are the collage stuff. Mm. I don't know how you boys felt, but I always kind of, I don't know, it never felt like it fit a lot of times in the books. But one of the panelists mentioned that originally he was hoping that every appearance in the Negative Zone was going to be like that.
Mm.
And sort of the interplay between doing the drawn art and the collage stuff. But part of it was, and some people like this and some people don't, is it never reproduced well. You right. know, if you ever look at them back yeah. issues, they're kind of muddy. And I don't know, it just never clicked with me. But seeing that stuff live and in person, and I guess, again, according to the speakers there, he would just do those on his own. They had one that was never published. He just liked doing collages.
Right.
I mean, like he didn't have enough doing 10 million pages a day or whatever. Like, and that was kind of the thing, I think, that as I get older, I more appreciate just how that guy can make so many pages and, you know, the imagination and the dynamicism. But I'm just like, man, just to make thousands and thousands of pages, that's an accomplishment in and of itself. And again, by having them all there, it was really neat to walk, you know, look at some Sinnott pages, look at some Royer pages, look at some Vinnie Colletta pages.
Honestly,
because that was the Thor issue.
You know, even though he only inked a few issues of Thor of them, Bill Everett was an incredible inker over Kirby. I'd put Bill Everett right up there with those guys, although obviously didn't ink them for as long as someone like a Royer or a Sinnott. But I'll always be a Sinnott guy just because I see him. I just saw him a few weeks. I saw him at that Little Albany comic book show. He's just so great. It's Joe.
Yeah, I was about in the middle. I didn't have a strong feel. Just a lot of the guys were like you. And I was like, I think Royer doesn't get his due necessarily. I think it's just because some of that. There seems to also feel like almost this revisionism sometimes with this new stuff. Because sadly, it didn't perform that great in its heyday, and they didn't last that long, and now it seems like everybody loves it, and it's that old lament of, well, if all them people that said they loved it, it wouldn't have been canceled so quickly. And they did have one nice, like, romance era page that I liked, but they just didn't have a lot of that, and I think it's tough to find, that would be my guess. But just those Fantastic Four pages, like any of those, you can just stare at those all day and all night, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they had some of the color, that painting that he did. I don't remember who, the Dream Machine? You must have seen that. It's like all the weird colors and Kirby tech all in it. They had that there.
Did he have any Ninja Turtles? I asked because in the new issue Ninja Turtles, they had a Jack Kirby cover.
Hmm.
No, I did not. It's really, like I said, it's mostly those two issues and then just random, like a bunch of Fantastic Four, some Captain America, some other of the, you know, Mr. Miracle, other New God stuff, the collages. I mean, there's a lot of material. And I was thinking, I was certainly scoping out security for a little while, thinking, they look like a bunch of uninterested college students, you know? We could really make this remunerative in a way.
Well, it's recorded now. You're playing.
Yeah, I was a good boy.
You're going to get one of those for Dave Jordan.
And I didn't steal any of the pages off the wall.
Wink, wink.
As tempting as it was. They had a really, I mean, come on, some demon pages. The one I liked was they had Captain America with the real, man, what's the name of the...
I'm fighting American?
No, no, the villain with the face in his chest. His name is
Arnim Zola.
Arnim Zola. They had a page with Arnim Zola on it. Mm. And that was just really, like, no one could do that character the way he did. With the, as Steve's talked about, kind of the influence of the movies and the TV taming the imagination of the comics in a way, and certainly the character design. It's so fresh to go to see this, like, unfettered. There was no thought of, is this ever going to look real on a screen or anything? It was just whatever crazy kind of design he wanted to make.
I know that Zola page you're talking about because our pal, Pat Loika, who has the Loika Mania show also on this network, he posted a lot of pictures of these pages under frames on his Instagram feed.
And I would imagine, I know Bob Gar said they were out of the book, but because it's IDW, I bet this will come back in stock. It's oversized soft cover. And what's interesting is it's reproductions of those pages, but also essays by all these different people talking about, you know, whatever random topic they want with connection to Kirby. So Kirby's intimacies, Crystal's face, Kirby's wilderness of building, the power of cosmic politics and symbolism in Kirby's creations, War on the Page, Kirby and Kurtzman by Howard Chaykin. Awesome. I mean, a lot of these are by, you know, kind of artists and academics. We have Carla Speed McNeil did a piece, you know, so there's also the working professional adding pieces to it, not just scholars and stuff. And the interesting thing about having it in Northridge is when the question time came, you know, he lived up there, so it's people that also could tell good stories and interesting stuff about Kirby the man, you know, forgetting his great artistic contribution. He's still a person, you know, and had family and loved ones and seemed like a pretty cool. They all talked about how welcoming he was. There was a guy that used to work for Malibu, and he said they all used to go up there once a week and have dinner, the whole art department. And that's just Kirby. He just invited everybody over.
Crazy.
But I never got to meet the man myself. He shuffled off this mortal coil before I moved out to the correct coast.
Name my secondborn after him.
So yeah, you're kind of into it. It was really fun. I hope that this spurs more. I mean, I'd seen one other display. There was that touring display about great cartoonists of America that had like 10, but about half of them were newspaper guys and everything. And so I'd like to maybe see more of appreciation of that in these other art spaces. Because it's interesting to see it in a gallery.
Phil.
Hi.
I miss you.
Well, I read a Frankenstein.
You're the reason I came back, Phil.
Oh, what did I do? Oh, because I said you abandoned us?
He doesn't listen to previous episodes.
You might.
Wait, what'd you say? No, I'm just kidding.
I read a classic Frankenstein story myself.
You did?
Yeah, it's called Monster Motors by IDW. Brian Lynch and Nick Roche. It's kind of like, well, I guess it's not really a classic, but basically mix monsters with, what's that Stephen King story? Maximum Overdrive.
Hmm.
Kind of like that. Like it's mixed with different vehicles. So basically it's about this, it's a one-shot and a two-issue miniseries collected in the trade. It's basically about this guy that moves to this town that's kind of backwards. They don't really have a mechanic, so that's why he moves there, to be a mechanic. And he moves to this junkyard, and there's a car that's really a vampire, and it's called Caddy Acula or something like that. And basically it sucks all the gas out of all the different cars, and it's going around the town, killing all that. So he builds a Franken, like a big truck, like a Frankenstein one. And there's characters like Wolfmobile,
sure,
Ghost Train, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hybrid, like all kinds of different like monsters that he fights. My favorite is, what is it? It's Mini Van Helsing. That's it. Like, just things like that. It's really goofy. I didn't think I was going to end up liking it. Because, I don't know, it just looked a little too goofy to me. But I was hoping it would have kind of like a Maximum Overdrive feel, which it didn't. But I ended up enjoying it a lot, and if there's a second trade, I'll end up picking it up.
Hmm. Cool.
I'm getting visions of that Futurama episode with the wear car.
This is very like as if it was a Saturday morning cartoon. It has that feel and look.
Well, let's make this an almost all IDW episode. And I want to bring up something also related to my visit to the Baltimore Comic Con. And it was another creator who I stopped in to speak with and was able to actually purchase from IDW a artist edition that was at least for that show at that time. I'm sure it was probably also sold at New York, and it's going to be sold through other outlets, I assume. I don't know. But at this time, at least, it was exclusive at Baltimore, was an artist edition portfolio of his covers from this six-issue series that I got in Baltimore. And that is Walt Simonson's Ragnarok.
Oh.
From IDW.
I read the first issue of that one. Yeah, I liked the art a lot.
It's a six-issue series, but it's book one of about six.
And that's what you got in the portfolio, was book one?
No, the portfolio is Simonson's covers.
Oh, just the covers, okay.
And a pin-up and a rough sketch thing that's cool. The regular series, the first six issues, have colors by Laura Martin and letters by good old John Workman, who, of course, you expect to see his lettering with Walt's work. I've enjoyed Walt Simonson's yarns and his art for decades, guys. Across several different titles, companies, several types of projects. I've got to say, this might be my favorite of them all.
Mm.
I really enjoyed it that much. It's steeped in the North Myth concepts that I associate with and love about Simonson. And at least the characters are connected to the myths.
It's almost Thor.
Right. In a weird way, but not really.
Yeah.
This book is the beginning of... It's better to know he had handled Thor in the past to see this story, because it's almost... It has its deconstructional aspects. But it tells the beginning of this large story by telling a small story, which is... Again, that is the way to lure me in. I've mentioned that before. That's the way to suck me in. Start small and get me going that way and then build. And just this six issues, he does that just with this six-issue window, too. It starts off really small. It ropes me in, and hopefully any reader, pretty quickly, because it starts telling the story of this dark elf assassin female. And she is tasked to uncover the grave of this dead stone god and ensure that he's actually dead. And when she's not a kick-ass assassin, this dark elf is like a family mom. She's a good wife to her husband. She's a good mother to her daughter that she loves. But this, like, armored guy... I don't know if he's a demon type or whatever, we learn eventually, but he is sending this dark elf assassin on this mission with the bargain being that he takes her beloved daughter if she fails. So she has she's pretty invested in completing the mission. So we follow her story, and it's, you're following one character. She's off on her quest. Boom. I'm sucked right in, you know? And it's beautifully colored and really so lovingly drawn by Simonson. It's none of this scratchy stuff just trying to, like, suggest and hope that Wycheck, inks it tight. This is really tightly drawn. And so she goes and she gathers a bunch of, like, henchmen to support her on this quest. She has to go through, like, this dangerous dungeon and get to the stone god, who, of course, isn't so dead. And he himself, the stone god, is this awesome visual. You've probably seen him on the cover. He's bottom jawless, so he talks just with this big black maw underneath, you know, this half skull. Ah, it's a really cool visual. You just read the first issue, Kevin, or Phil?
Yeah, only the first issue. It was a long time ago, though, now.
How about you, yeah, James? Did you check any of it out?
I just recently read the first issue. I was scared it was going to be, like, the whole thing was going to be, like, the first few pages. When they start, you know, I'm like, oh, is there going to be dialogue and stuff? But it gets into the story and everything like that. And I knew he still had the drawing chops anyways, because he had done some other work recently, and I'm like, I really like that. And yeah, this is really nice.
And then there's the whole thing of she failed the request, and so the daughter is forfeit, but the father, the husband, isn't going to have any of that. And we learn that the guy who is enabling, who sent her on the task, is a mythical figure himself who in myths has this sword that can cut anything, and he gives it to the elf, the male elf, the husband, father, and says, you know what, I won't take the daughter if you complete her contract, and here's the tool to do it. So he goes off, and you know, his path is going to cross with the stone god at some point. The stone god himself is becoming more aware of what's around him, and once you find out his identity, which I won't spoil, it's really cool. And then he's trying to figure out what happened to the other gods, so he's on his quest, and it's all Norse related. So behind it all, of course, is Surtur, the fire demon, in his Mespelheim, you know, dimension, conjuring up the flames, and sends one of his big emissaries out to take down the stone god. And that's the big climactic battle that ends the first volume. Really, I mean, it's such clean, smooth, experienced, engaging storytelling. Really great stuff. And look for the next volume in 2016 for sure. Walt promises.
I'll have to check, like the other guys, I picked up the first. I think I got one of those con exclusive covers for the opening one. But I bet you it's going to get collected in a nice form.
Yeah, it actually has been solicited the last 2 months in a row. It should be hitting the shelves in November and December.
Hopefully my LCS is still rolling by then.
By the way, Secret Identities, Andrew, was canceled, eh? Because you were trade waiting.
Oh, blame it on me. Sure, Phil. I'm the one guy.
Could have been.
That's what they all say. I'm only one guy. I couldn't make a difference. And then everyone said that.
Go on, make another round here. Kevin, give me something else.
I know I'm not supposed to talk about Valiant Comics on this podcast anymore.
You know how much Valiant I had to hear about on in Baltimore?
Did they say that Imperium is really interesting right now?
But the guys at the booth were really nice. I was talking to them. The guys from Valiant. It's just a whole world I don't want to spend time getting into.
Yeah,
they're really nice, Steve. I'll second that. I've met Dinesh and a few of those guys. Everybody has always unfailingly been super friendly.
Yep.
And you know what else was awesome? They were periscoping all the panels for the Valiant stuff, so I was like, awesome. Like, I always wonder for panels for conventions, like, people could somehow get more of this stuff online.
They say the Valiant panels are fun, too. And it's funny you talk about not doing any programming at Long Beach this time, Andrew. But I barely ever go to panels. I won't say never, but I rarely ever go to panels. Poor Arlen Schumer was trying to get me to go to one of his panels for the Silver Age of comic book art. And it's just like, he's like, are you going to go? And I'm like, he's like, oh, you're not going to go, are you? I'm like, well, it's not you. I don't go to panels, really. I want to be walking the floor. And I understand, though, my buddies all go to the Valiant one and say it's great. So
yeah. Normally I need at least one break off my feet. That makes it good. I can't stand off my feet that long.
You know, we have sketch duels here. So if you get a good sketch duel, that's always, like, the best panel. Especially if you win some artwork, you know. It hasn't happened to me yet, but, you know. Some one of these days.
The ones I go to, they usually end up auctioning it off for charity or whatever.
So did you say it was Imperium that you're talking about?
Oh, I wasn't going to talk about it. I'm not allowed to talk about it on here anymore.
What book did you want to
But you know, I was going to say Imperium really interesting these days. But anyhow,
that's not what I'm going to talk about. Steve for another month. Thanks, Kevin.
We'll have to get Steve off of here if I'm going to talk about that. Anyhow, yeah, I read some SF, which is about SF, SF, SF. All like dots in between the letters. That's about the Space Fleet, Scientific Foundation, Special Forces. All about Hoopa Dupa. So I don't know if you figured it out yet, but it's sort of like an all-ages sci-fi story from Koyama Press by Ryan Cecil Smith. So it sort of combines like all these sci-fi genre things like Robotech and, you know, and pretty much all the sci-fi stuff. But like he's his parents are killed and he's sort of taken in by this thing, by this science fiction, by this SF, SF, SF.
Would you call me?
But it seems like there's something going on with him. Like some people don't trust him. But anyways, yeah, he's brought up in this whole thing, and they run into pirates and stuff like that. It kind of reminds me in the way of Dan Slott's Silver Surfer. Like there's sort of that fun thing going on, and there's like weird outer space stuff where there'll be like asteroids, and they'll be like telling people not to go there, and there'll be like things hiding out there, or they'll run into other weird things in outer space. And this is the third one, and I had no problems reading it, but I'm gonna assume now that the first two pages are really a recap of issues 1 and 2, but I didn't clue into that right away. I'm just like, oh, it's starting off with a lot of captions, and it's talking about what he did and how he studied and everything and became part of this thing that he's part of. So I was just like, oh, yeah, that's good. Like, it assumes, like, you might not have the first two issues, so they, you know, just use a page on something like that.
Has it been that long since comics used to do that pretty much across the board? Wow.
Yeah, so I also find there's like an interesting coloring thing going on. Like the pages, if you just look at the, like as the pages in the books, they're all like purple, but like it's a black and white basically, but the pages, when you put them all together, it forms another color. I'm like, neat. And the first page, like when they have some stuff where they're telling you what the SF Scientific Foundation's all about, it's all pink. So there's like a little bit of color, but it's not really a color book. So I would definitely pick this up if I saw another issue of this. It was a good time. Space pirates, you know, crazy asteroid fields, a city like on top of an asteroid, like, you know, crazy shenanigans like that. What's not to like? Flying space cars, you know.
Well, I'm going to, for my end, do a little round robin of some of the stuff I picked up at the Long Beach show. A lot of it was continuation, so tune into prior episodes to hear a more in-depth display. But I did get Chapter 3 of Death Trip by Kenny Kyle.
Oh. Which
the three of us spoke about not that long ago. That one, you got to go a little bit further back for Hex 11, which I spoke about. I picked up their latest couple of issues on that. And it's good to see that these people, you know, it's always heartening when you go back and they have a new issue. And Trouble, Guts, and Noir, I spoke about not too recently again. I got his new issue, too. Plus, obviously, brand new comics. It was a fun little digest-sized Love Machines, Volume 1, Issue 5. Josh Trujillo is the author. And it's interesting, it's based on this turn-of-the-century, purportedly a true story about the kind of weird art scene that existed. And, it's just a really short, well, you know, these books, for the most part, they're kind of fun books, but they're quick. Zero Squared by Zero Squared. What I thought, this is a full-size comic. Thomas McDonald is the creator. This was totally free. It was like a promotion for his webcomic of the same name. And it was a really good comic, but I was like, whoa, like a free, complete, full comic? Like, that seems like a crazy promotion. Well, I guess it gets it in the hands of buyers like me. And then I bought a full trade size of The Ghost Engine by Danny Jalosevic and Eric Zadowski. And that one's kind of a, you know, time-traveling adventure, fun in an alternate world. And I like that. It was fun. It was a couple years old, but it didn't matter to me because it was a new comic I'd never seen before. And then lastly, I ran into Mike Vosburg.
Nice.
And I mentioned how much I had enjoyed, you know, you had mentioned the book you talked about, so I asked him about that. He showed me some of that. We talked about Laurie Lovecraft,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess used to be called Linda Lovecraft, but too many people thought it was Linda Lovelace.
Right.
So we had to change that, and I mentioned how I enjoyed his work recently in Star Reach, which we still have yet to get to, which we're going to do at some point. So I picked up a sketchbook from him of lady characters, and then another volume of the old Laurie Lovecraft. It's just, he's such a nice guy.
Yes, and he is.
It was fun to talk to, you know, because I ran into him via you. That was a nice intro to talk to him. I picked up KO Comics issue 110 by Brett Otley. And the this one is where superpowers are sort of randomly given out, but then you're entered into the sort of Highlander contest. So, and there's 10 people. So this guy shows up one day and he's got this outfit and it's number 10 and he has all these weird superpowers. But then the other guys come out to eliminate him, a guy with a number 4 and a number 6. And then someone eliminates them. And so it's this, he's learning the rules of the game of being like, how does this whole system work? You know, what's going on? You have superpowers, but people are out to get you. But it's done as a humorous book. And then one of the bigger gets were the Immonens were there, which I'm sure Kevin Filler with. So I picked up Russian Olive to Red King and Stewart's sketchbook.
Nice.
Too. And he's really nice. He does a little sketch. He asks you, boy, girl, or dog? It's a girl. And so he drew a girl in the cover, and then she wrote this weird kind of freeform poetry thing in the inside as well, and they signed it. It was just really nice. I liked, and they seemed like polite Canadians, unlike our Canadians. But, yeah, they were down there. So that was my super quick books I got at Long Beach in a nutshell. And I left a few slams in there for Phil on Canadians. Slam!
You didn't want a Stuart Eminem Clifford in your book, huh?
I didn't. Well, he didn't say. He just says boy, girl, or dog. You know, he's not like, I'm going to sketch. I mean,
can it be a dog with a space helmet?
I guess you could have surmised or whatever, but I just randomly said, oh, girl, for sure.
Scooby-Doo?
He ended up drawing. And he had his other stuff there, but obviously I'm not going to be buying his Marvel. You know, he's there selling his stuff. I'm interested in that.
It reminds me of a commission I bought online once, and they only wanted one word, and then they would draw you a commission. So I said caveman, and I got an awesome commission back, so it was all good.
Yeah, there's something fun when they inject a series of whimsy into it.
Phil!
Well, I'll just do some quick mentions of some stuff I read. It's just really recent, so I won't talk about it yet, but two by Dark Horse that are worth picking up. One is Paybacks. And it's basically, think of like the Suicide Squad, but they go around and they repo stuff from superheroes. Like in this first issue, they repo stuff from a Batman type character.
Huh.
That's really good. And then the other one's by Dark Horse 2 called Power Third, or Power Squared. And it's basically this kid gets this box of alien technology and anything he imagines comes to life. It's kind of like a Saturday cartoon kind of feel too. And also the Evil Dead comic I talked about by Space Goat,
right,
is just getting better and better. And any,
is that Evil the Dead by Dawn one?
Yeah, an Evil Dead fan has to get this. The anthology isn't as good and you don't need to pick that up, but this other series is must get. And I just watched the trailer for the TV show today. That looks really good. Did you guys watch that yet?
No.
The TV show comes out on Halloween, and it's with Bruce Campbell again, and it has the feel of Evil Dead.
I read the first two issues of that Dead by Dawn one, and I enjoyed it.
it's an interesting concept. Like it's very original for an Evil Dead type story. And I find they have the character down right for him.
Yes.
And it's neat because it's him before Army of Darkness and all that.
Right. And it's the cabin and all that. Yeah. At least it starts that way.
And it's when he's still possessed, which is the cool thing too.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up with one last book here. How about Heathen 1-3?
Woohoo.
First three
and the mini comic too, Steve.
What's that?
And the mini and her mini comic too.
What's the mini?
Rabbit. The little mini comic she did in the same world.
I don't think I know of it.
I'm a big fan because it's like a few pages and it's really rough. Like it's not finished like the proper book is, but it's really rough. And it's the character takes on a rabbit, but they become friends.
Oh. This is written and drawn by Natasha Al-Tarisi. And I picked up the first three books on Comixology digitally. And so
support print.
You've read it also, Andrew?
Yeah, I backed the Kickstarter. I think that's probably how I got the mini.
Gotcha.
Which is what I mean. It's super rough, but I kind of like the rough. It has a charm to it that's fun done that way. I mean, I wouldn't buy a whole issue of it, but a fun little 8 pages is kind of cute.
You too, Kevin. You've read some of this?
Yeah, I got it off of Comixology. I think it was one of the you know, they do the podcast over there on Comixology and they push some of the submit stuff.
Right.
So that's how I got the first issue. And yeah, I remember seeing the Kickstarter and saying, I don't know if the story is going to be any good, but man, does that artwork look nice.
Yeah, I always scan the submit stuff and look for new interesting stuff. And man, like you said, the art looks really nice. And the story, I have found it to be quite interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to set it up here. It basically, without spoiling the fun of how she chooses to tell the story and how she chooses to make her beats, but basically you've got like Brunhild the Valkyrie disobeying Odin and being sentenced to kind of like a banishment where she's cast down to Midgard and imprisoned, and for whatever reason, herself chooses to add the mitigating circumstance of being in this like mountain prison surrounded by flame, only being able to be freed by a suitor who is worthy of her hand in marriage. So she's cursed to... She was cursed to marry a mortal, but she says, well, this mortal's going to have to pass this test of being worthy of getting through the, flame of truth or whatever. But it's not Steve Trevor or Prince Charming who comes to the rescue, but a Viking female named Adis, who herself is a fine hunter warrior, and herself was cast out from her clan for the crime of kissing a girl and liking it. And, I mean, that's all well and good until the Valkyries get wind of the pair, that this female Viking, Adis, frees Brunhild, passes the test, and frees her. So the Valkyries swoop down and revisit with Brunhild and kidnap Adis. And now Brunhild has to go and find her. It's all tricky, guys, because the agendas of the gods can be difficult to ascertain and wrap our human heads around. Yeah, but sometimes they've got the long game in mind that we can't fathom.
No, they're selfish.
Because they can wait millennium, you know, for the payoff, right? And we can't. So it's difficult to grasp their true intentions, but there's all stuff going on with the gods. They take the opportunity to have these little myths and side tales that I find very interesting and not at all interrupting the narrative. But my favorite thing about the book, guys, is her animation and her speaking animals. There's this wraith spirit called like a white, W-I-H-T, inside a horse. So the horse talks like Mr. Ed, and he's a good fellow. and there's this pair of sibling wolves, the rhythm of whose back and forth verbals reminded me of like the old Heckle and Jekyll cartoons of my youth. They're hilarious, and without meaning to be, just their back and forth. They've been around a long time, and they're so used to each other, and they bounce their observations off each other, and it's great. And the two encounter the horse wraith, and it takes up 8 pages of story in the second issue, which it ends up being a ratio I'd love to see continued. It was really great. I you know, there's like a gay lesbian, acceptance that seems like it's promoted through the series. It certainly is tagged that way through Comixology. But I don't find that to be overpowering or the main thrust of the story. Maybe it's going there, but I find it to be just very interesting visually, and there's a quest going on, and now the two of them are separated, and they're each trying to get back to each other, and we'll see how it turns out. I'm along for the ride as long as she's willing to keep drafting it.
I'm in the same boat. The animal interludes are really something. The only thing I kind of wish, maybe pulled in a letterer on it. The kind of, I understand separating the speech of the black balloons and the white lettering and vice versa. Sometimes the lettering for me, I don't know, maybe my computer settings are off or something, but that's the only part I feel like could be punched up a little bit. I don't like that. I just find it hard to read. Do you have any problem with that, Steve, or it's nothing?
No, I didn't. I'm reading on my iPad, so I don't mind quick blowing up panels if I need to. But I enjoy the black lettering or the black balloon backgrounds with the white lettering when the animals are speaking. I think it seems really otherworldly and creepy, and I really like the whole feel of the book. Everything feels like it's affected by like I'm looking over a campfire at it, and the way that, you know, that Vision is, you know, that light is bent around because of the heat. It just, everything seems to be flowing and part of the smoke and just very fluid to me. I really enjoy the whole experience, especially reading. I read 2 issues together, and then when the third one came out, I read the second one and the third one together. I really like having the time to step into the world and really feel like, all right, I'm there. And blocking out the things around me, and it just has a very nostalgic-y, like Indian, you know, American Indian type lore wrapped with the Norse Viking aspect. I really like it. I dig it a lot.
Yeah, no, no, it wasn't the thing. The other thing is, maybe I should stop getting PDFs of these things.
Ugh,
for like. PDFs. Because a lot of my Kickstarter are PDF instead of...
Yeah, you can't help it with the Kickstarter sometimes, though.
And maybe that's affecting the kind of readability of it. But no, the world is... What I like is the animals add a whimsical element.
Yeah.
That doesn't bog it. Sometimes that stuff can get a little bogged. Like, not that it's not serious, but it can be overly... And it's just the perfect amount of break into it. Like you say, it'd be nice. I hope... the she continues with that.
Yeah, like the horse walking away after showing himself to be a fine fellow, and the, you know, one wolf turned to the other one being like, you know, to think I was going to eat the guy. He was a pretty good guy. And the other guy's like, yeah, he was. How about that, you know? I just enjoy that just a couple of wolves hanging out, talking to each other, waiting for the end of the world. And that kind of is what we're like. 4 guys hanging around waiting for the end of the world, reading some comics, some good indie comics, making a little noise about it, right?
And some bad indie comics.
Maybe we'll get to those next episode.
Yeah, I did read something about some Valiant.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, a certain holiday is coming up, so next episode might be a little spooktacular.
No, it's the holiday was today.
We're not doing a Canadian Thanksgiving episode. First of all, I'm not sure how many comics we're going to have. I mean, I'm sure Captain Canuck has a few issues, but
it just came out actually.
I like that new series. There's four in the tank, and I'm going to talk about it eventually, but not next episode. But well, maybe now. What if we do one before Halloween?
Is that a promise?
Now you're sounding like Phil. New Steve. I like it.
You better be on the ball, Steve, if we're going to get two out. And, you know,
that's a promise, guys. I think.
Thanks for keeping the trainer rolling while I was distracted otherwise. And like I said, it wasn't just a case of not having time to record, because there's always time to fit in a recording, but it was the case of not having material to have read. I just have been so busy, I haven't had the pleasure of sitting back and just reading some books, and now I'm finally getting to some. The kids are back at school. Everything's dying around me as it's fall, so there's more time to sit around and enjoy reading some indie comics. Which is what I suggest you all listeners do, is to resist the big two and go read some indie comics. Later.